Kate Pearson is a founding member of the B-52s, which has been around for nearly 50 years with such hits as Rock Lobster, Love Shack, and Rome, and so many others. They just finished their latest Las Vegas residency at the Venetian Resort, and were seen as part of the SNL 50 music celebration, which was just, badass. 9 years after her solo debut, 2015's Guitars and Microphones, Kate Pearson has a brand new album. It is Radios and Rainbows. We just heard the title track. It is a just deliciously beautiful, diverse collection of songs, personal reflection, activism, dance music, everything you would want from a Kate Pearson album. And Kate is here this morning to talk about the new album, as well as her gig at City Winery, Hudson Valley, in Montgomery on Friday, May 2nd at 7:30. And with God as my witness, Kate Pearson joins us in Studio A. How are you?
I am great, Joe. Joe, you don't know how happy it makes me feel to see you in person. I listen to your dulcet tones in the morning, every morning. My wife Monica and I listen to the Round Table, and it keeps us sane. And I love WAMC so much, and it's one of those stations that tells it like a TI is.
Well, thank you very much. I will tell you that you know this, but I will tell the audience, you have been a wonderful, you and Monica have been wonderful to the station over the years, and have just been such great supporters. And we thank you so much for that. And we're just delighted to have you here and to talk about all this cool stuff that's going on. Did you think you'd be working this hard at this point in your life?
No. And I ask myself sometimes, I'm about to have a birthday, April 27th, and I will be 77.
Yeah.
Sunset Strip. And I'm still here, still going strong. I just feel like my creativity is even just getting motivated. I'm writing a Christmas album. I'm just, new songs are coming into my head all the time. And previously, the last two records that I had, Guitars and Microphones, and this one, Radios and Rainbows, I've had co-writers.
Yeah.
And now I'm writing all these songs that are just coming into my head, and the whole song I'm writing by myself, and it may be some weird songs, but they're mine.
Well, you know, weird, but they're subjective, but they're so you. They're so what we would... I said this in the introduction.
Yes.
It was so what we would expect from you. So much what we would expect as Kate Pearson fans, as B-52 fans.
Well, it's interesting how songwriting, and especially the way the B-52s write, is by jamming. So we've always written collectively. There are a few songs that were written by individuals, but we write collectively, and that makes for a very interesting mix of collective unconscious streaming kind of things coming out of the heads of each member, and it coalesces. We record everything, and then we put it together, the parts, sort of like a collage. But when I've written for my solo records, it surprises me what subjects come out. For example, If You Give Your Heart to Science, which is on this record, I had no intention of writing about the death of my friend Jeremy Ayers.
Yeah.
But it just pops out somehow. Maybe the title, and then all of a sudden the lyrics, and things just sort of appear, and it surprises me.
So let me ask, what it was, do you think, that after all of the years with B-52s, and then... It's not until 2015 that you do your first solo album, and which is really cool. That must have been freeing.
I did feel that there was a certain loyalty to the band, that there's a family dynamic, and I guess everyone understands, you know, your brothers or sisters, and somebody goes off and does something. This is totally in my own head, that it was a betrayal to the band. And I just felt, I couldn't write without the band. But I did do a project in Japan in 1998, where the band, B-52s, were taking a break, which we usually do. There are periods of time when we don't we haven't written together. So I was asked to do this project. It was called Nina. And I went to Japan and wrote with one of the big producers in Japan who used to be in the Plastics. And they were like a B-52's
right.
alternative universe band. They were a Japanese band, but very much like the B-52's. And they opened for us in the early days. So one of the members became a big producer, asked me to join this project. It was on Sony. It went to number one. We traveled all over Japan. We ate really great food. We called it the noodle tour. So that was the first time I realized I can write with anyone. I wrote with Yuki and Sakamasan, who didn't speak English and I didn't speak Japanese, and it worked. So this opened up a whole new vista to me, and I realized I could write with anyone.
I was you just brought up something too, though, when you were talking about taking a break. But unless I'm missing a major storyline here, this is a band, the B-52s, that has gone on for nearly 50 years. Without the drama that so often accompanies other rock bands.
Well, there's internal drama always, but
well, that's life, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's
that
everyday life.
That's any family has some, but not a lot. You know, we still miraculously want to be with each other. When we go to Vegas, we still hang out. Sometimes have dinner with each other, laugh. I mean, we still laugh together. During the SNL, Cindy said something just out of the blue, and we just cracked up. You know, it's just still make each other laugh, and that's really kind of the glue that can keep a band together, I think, is a common... We're all from very similar backgrounds, too, but I think the togetherness and the feeling of mutual respect has kept us all together. We have had drama when Ricky Wilson passed away
sure.
in 1985.
Yeah.
That was a major turning point for the band, a point where we didn't know if it was a point of no return.
And was it, when you say point of no return, was it a thought that we could not go on without Ricky, or an idea that, or we don't want to go on without Ricky, or that this is something, okay, well, we're not the B-52s anymore without this other member?
I think it was more like we couldn't go on without Ricky. We thought we couldn't. We thought this was just so devastating, and also it hit us so hard in the sort of grief that we just needed to grieve and take time. And the suggestion that we should get another guitar player and get out on the road and support the last record that he worked on, which is Bouncing Off the Satellites.
Yeah.
That was just unthinkable to us to get another guitar player. And Ricky was so essential to the band and such a driving force, his propulsive, amazing guitar playing. Then Keith Strickland started, we both moved to Woodstock after Ricky died, and we were living on Yankeetown Pond across from each other, and I would canoe over to Keith's house, and he played some music for me that he had written, and I thought, wow, this is exciting. And we, Keith played it for the other band members, and we thought, we can get it back together, and this is going to be a healing process. And we made a declaration, which we really had never done before. We said, this is not for commercial hit making. We're not going to try to make a comeback. This is for us and our fans. And it was just such a healing process, which felt like Ricky was there somehow guiding us. It was a pretty amazing feeling.
You know, what I'm about to say I have no data. There's no scientific run on this. It's 100% just anecdotal. But I was about 2 weeks ago, I teach over at Bennington College, and I was talking to the students, and I mentioned something about Paul Simon. Nobody knew who Paul Simon was.
What?
Right?
Yeah.
I was like, so yesterday I mentioned that you were going to be on the show today. I said, Kay Pearson from the B-52s. Everybody knew the B-52s.
Wow.
Every kid in that class, all 25 of those kids knew the B-52s. And
wow.
That says something to me. I mean, I think that talks about how the band makes you feel, how infectious it is, and how much fun it is to hang with you all.
Well, I do think we want to bring joy. And when we started the band, we did make one other declaration, and that is we're a tacky little dance band from Athens, Georgia. And we never wanted to, I guess we're sort of eternal non-professionals in our thinking. You know, we never wanted to be like, we're rock stars. You know, it's just kind of a feeling of always renewal and writing together is always something. Can we do it? Yeah, it's working. And I think also we just want to dance and bring joy. And back in Athens, we dance at the drop of a hat. We'd go over to our friend John Taylor's house, and he'd be baking cornbread, and we'll put on hot pants with James Brown, and we'd dance around the table with the cornbread. And so we really wanted to be a dance band, and Rock Lobster was the first single we had, and that is an eternal song. For some reason, it's been dismissed by critics as just a list of fish, but those fish can dance. It's pretty amazing how that song really gets people, their freak flags fly, they start dancing, and it's interesting to watch the audience when we do that song.
But it's a joyous song. It's just fun.
Yeah, it's fun, and there are no hidden messages, although people can read into it, possibly. Don't eat the lobsters, I guess.
How do you get to a point where you think that... I'm just thinking of like studio executives sitting in the highest echelons of a tower in Manhattan or in Hollywood, and saying, "Oh, we have this Rock Lobster song. Let's put that out as the hit." Like, how does that happen?
Well, I think really in those days, word of mouth and going to New York City. We were in Athens, and friends of ours the only other band that was sort of punk or new wave in the whole area, because it was still just nothing was happening in Athens. There were no real bars or clubs to play. It was a folk club. So they said, go to New York City, take your tape. We started going up to New York City and playing at CBGB's and Max's Kansas City and Hurrah's and the Mud Club. And word of mouth spread. And I think the record executives thought, we don't know what the hell they, who is this crazy band? People thought we were from England, or Cindy and I were drag queens. People thought we were very odd, although we didn't really think we were that odd. And I think this was kind of happening all over the country too, bands starting to do their own thing. And when record executives saw the groundswell of and other bands coming to see us, like Talking Heads and Blondie and... it was just such a, I think they knew something was happening, even though they might not have gotten exactly what it was. And some people came down to Athens to woo us, some record companies, Virgin Records and Sire. Seymour Stein from Sire Records was really a big fan. And we just thought, oh, free dinner, because we didn't know what to do. So we waited, and then Tina and Chris from Talking Heads introduced us to their manager, and he got us a deal with Warner Brothers and Island Records.
Yeah.
And Chris Blackwell from Island Records, who's just an amazing producer and has a great ear for music. We went to the Bahamas, and he produced the record. He put his legs up on the table, smoked a big joint, and said, I just want you to sound like you sound on stage. And we recorded that record. And it sounded really disappointing to us because it sounded very sparse. But that was a genius move because we sounded different.
I think that's an amazing thing of sound like you sound on stage. And not that's hard to pull off, isn't it? Yeah. And so to do that is because, again, that gives it that fun, very loose vibe to it.
And radio didn't want to play our songs, especially Rock Lobster, but college radio, thank God for college radio, because they played it and it caught on, and then commercial radio started playing Rock Lobster. But it really caught on when we did Love Shack. And that was another song that they were a little bit wary to play because it's a bit unusual song. But that is a song that has such longevity, and I think kids know it because it gets played at every karaoke and every wedding, and it's sort of an eternal song.
Right, and I remember when that song came out. What was the year? Was it 80?
1999.
It Love Shack came out in 99? Really?
Wait a minute. Hold it. Don't ask me for time zones.
That's all right. That's fine.
My sense of time since the pandemic.
We're putting together an anniversary show. We have no idea what happened 5 years ago as opposed to 20 years ago. Nobody has any idea.
No, no. But I think Good Stuff was 2001? Sorry. Wait a minute.
Because I remember it as a college song, 1989.
Thank you.
Cosmic 89. Thing, 89.
What's another 10 years?
That's right. Yeah, 89. And and my goodness, that was just everywhere. That was just everywhere. And thank goodness it saved us.
It saved us, too. It really saved us because we, you know, I think we had the sense that that song was going to be a hit.
Yeah.
REM came into the studio when we were recording it, and they said, oh, my God, that's a hit. We thought, well, we have something here. It almost didn't get on the record because it wasn't quite finished, and we worked with Don Was, and we made the suggestion of, anyway, we added some parts to it, repeated some parts, and it put it all together, and it got on the record, and it was the biggest hit.
And off you go. I want to take a break here for a second.
And what year is it now?
It's 2025, maybe. I don't know. Let's just pray we get to 26.
Really?
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. And I want to talk to you again about go back to college radio, because I think that's a fascinating chapter in the history. And then, of course, I want to really dig deep and to talk about the new album, because it's absolutely gorgeous. Kate Pearson is here. The new album is Radio and Rainbows. And Kate is going to be at City Winery Hudson Valley in Montgomery, New York, on Friday, the 2nd of May at 7:30. And you can find out more by going to citywinery.com or katepearson.com. And we'll continue our conversation with the great Kate Pearson of the B-52s after this break. News break and a couple of announcements. And we'll return in just a moment with Kate Pearson. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. Kate Pearson is our guest from the B-52s and has a solo album just out called Radio and Rainbows. And Kate will be at City Winery in the Hudson Valley on Friday, May 2nd. It's located in Montgomery, New York, 7:30 p.m. And I want to talk about Radio and Rainbows because it's such a beautiful album. We just heard the song Higher Place. That's a really personal song.
Yes.
You were talking earlier about writing and the songs pouring out of you, but that's a personal song.
Very. And by the way, it is radios, plural. Radios.
My apologies.
Many
that's
radios my, yes. coming at you.
Yes.
But yeah, that song is another surprise to me that I wrote. I was in an emotionally abusive relationship for a while, and so my wife, Monica, when I met her, when I got out of that relationship, my wife, Monica, really saved me. And the song, The Beauty of It All, is really kind of about that. I dedicate that to her. She really empowered me. And I felt really in a low place. And I'm a very naturally positive person, and I didn't really go too deeply down, but I just really felt like, wow, I got myself into a bad place. And when I got out of that, you know, things started really opening up for me, and started writing, and, you know, just the world became in color again. But I didn't intend to write something so personal. That's what's so great about a solo record is you can really write something personal. And it's always, again, surprises me how these personal feelings can come out in a song, in the lyrics, without pre-thought, without calculating, oh, I'm going to write about this or this. It just poured out of me. And it's an interesting psychological study of myself, too. I think, wow, this is so interesting. And it's also genuine, too. So I think that when you write a song and it's genuinely flowing from your heart, that's a good song.
I'm sure you're told this all the time, so make me the millionth and one person who says this to you, but just how gorgeous your voice is. There just doesn't seem to be any, I mean, that this album now and your vocal performance on that song and this album is just stellar.
Thank you so much. My show, the live show, it's such a thrill to sing these songs live and to have my voice more featured because it's less production. I have Ken Murie playing keyboard and guitar, and Tracy Wormworth. They both play with the B-52s. She plays bass. John Valesio is a local drummer and producer, and he's doing the drums. So it's a less produced kind of...
Sure.
But it's really powerful. People were really on their feet at the end of the show, and during the show, people were really... It's very satisfying because I add in some B-52s songs and some songs that I've been on, like Shiny Happy People, Candy.
Song.
So I just want the audience to really be satisfied because it's hard to hear all new songs. So I do a lot of the new songs, a couple of songs from Guitars and Microphones, and then I put the hits in there too, and some B-52 songs, and it's just a really good live performance.
Great set list.
Yeah.
And a lot of fun.
Gonna really suck it to them.
That's right. Absolutely. There is, I wanted to ask you about another song, Dream On, that you have on the album, and we're going to point to Mike here and just play a little bit of this, and then I'd like to talk about it. Go ahead. It's a beautiful song, but that's just a good old call to dissent, isn't it?
Yes. I was inspired by the Edward Starr song, War.
Yeah.
And also Patti Smith, People Have the Power. It's one of my favorite songs, and Patti Smith's one of my very favorite artists. So, this was another unusual writing process where I was writing with, recording some of the demos for this record at Dreamland, which was the studio where we did Cosmic Thing, part of Cosmic Thing and part of Good Stuff, where the B-52s recorded.
Yeah.
Back to Dreamland, and Tracy and Sterling Campbell, who's the B-52s drummer, and Ken and I were recording these other songs, and we had time, and I said, let's jam, let's try to write a song. And they were just playing this riff, and I came up with these lyrics, and another unexpected thrill. So, yeah, I'd like to, I mean, times are rough now. Politically, times are strange, times are drastic and dire. I want to be uplifting and think positive, but I also want to have some political thought, something thoughtful. And this song really is the most political song in the album, besides Radios and Rainbows, too.
But this has been really a hallmark of the band from the very beginning. I mean, that link to activism.
Yes. I mean, we've always been very active with AIDS charities and PETA. In fact, the band Betty is going to open for
Oh, they're me. Great. Okay, yeah.
And Betty's been around. We met them in, I think it was 1988, at this big PETA, big animal rights festival in Washington, D.C., and it was on the lawn. And it was the most amazing thing. And there were all other, Howard Jones was there and Natalie Merchant. And I came out with a chimpanzee who hugged me and just hugged me and looked in my eyes and laughed. And I found out later it was Bubbles.
Oh, my God.
Michael Jackson's Bubbles. Jane Goodall reprimanded PETA for bringing out the chimp. I think that was kind of not the best thing. But it was pretty amazing. And anyway, Betty has been, I've been friends with them since then, and they're opening, and they're just amazing. And we're also playing May 1st in Philadelphia City Winery.
Yes, a beautiful venue.
Yeah.
A great, great city, obviously. That's where I grew up. Let me ask you about the idea of when Guitars and Microphones came out. Did you immediately start? I mean, yes, we have a pandemic in the middle there, but did you immediately start writing songs for Radios and Rainbows?
Well, these were a collection of songs that some of the songs I wrote way back. In fact, Every Day is Halloween was the first song I wrote with Sia and also Sam Dixon. And it was the first writing session with Sia, who was my co-writer on the first record, Guitars and Microphones. So that was from way back, and I don't know why that didn't go on the first record, but I decided that has to be on this record. I love that song, and everyone loves Halloween, so everyone needs a good Halloween song they could play every year. It's not just for Halloween, because every day is Halloween.
It's so much better than Monster Mash, though, Kate.
That one is fun. But anyway, I wrote with Chris Braid. I wrote with Blue McCauley and Jimmy Harry, who's written with Madonna, and all these co-writers who are major co-writers. And then some of them I wrote, actually just Chris Braid sent me a couple of tracks that I wrote to, but usually I'd be in the room with the writer. And then so I just collected all these, and I could have put it out before the pandemic, but the B-52s were touring and we were doing a farewell tour, and then the pandemic, I didn't want to put it out during that time.
Right.
So it really got delayed, but it was a good thing because now's a good time, and I just had to collect, and I decided each co-writer would produce because they did the instrumentation mostly. So they could produce the track, and then we put it all together. And it was, and then I wrote a couple of songs after the pandemic, like Dream On. And here it is, Radios and Rainbows.
It's a beautiful album, Radios and Rainbows. And we'll talk a little bit more about it in a moment. You mentioned Saturday Night Live, but the Saturday Night Live SNL 50 music celebration at Radio City Music Hall. My God, what an event. Just an amazing, incredible event. But, I mean, you're on with all of the greats. You come out and you just, the place went nuts. That must have been just, how do you get rid of that high?
I don't know. When I saw it after, and the camera panned to the audience, and I saw Seinfeld dancing, I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And I got to sit in the audience after we performed, and we got to see Nirvana with Dave Grohl playing drums.
Right.
And Post Malone, it was amazing. But Dave Grohl has been such a great supporter, and he has always said when he watched our first performance of the B-52s on Saturday Night Live, it changed his life. And that's just amazing to me that, and certainly there are musicians who I feel changed my life. I mean, Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan and so many, I really grew up in the folk movement kind of era. But yeah, he was really, really inspired by the B-52s. So to see him play there and see so many bands, for us to be on that was so fun. And Fred Armisen was playing drums, and Bowen Yang and Sarah Sherman joined, and they were just having so much fun joining on Love Shack. So we really had a blast.
And what did Saturday Night Live mean when you were on that show initially, the first time you were on?
I think that really made us. TV was such a big deal to be on TV for a band, to be on MTV. Our music videos really made a splash. But being on Saturday Night Live was such an iconic thing, and so many other people have come up to me and said it was life-changing to see us. I guess because it was different. We were very different. And I think that's why the band has had longevity, because we're so unique. No one could really categorize us. But when people saw us, they thought, wow, it's okay to be different. I think it gave people this feeling of inclusivity, that they could be different, let their freak flag fly and be gay or different in whatever way, or trans, just feeling of inclusivity. Whatever you were, you could be part of the Love Shack, or that wasn't written yet, but you could be a rock lobster.
Kate Pearson is our guest. We are talking to her about her new album, Radios and Rainbows, and her gig at City Winery, and just all kinds of really cool stuff going on. Mentioned the residency at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas. You just got done. Hopefully be going back later this year. And what is that like to be in one place for a little while and hang your hat?
It's great. I would never go to Las Vegas voluntarily, you know, to just go, because I don't gamble, and it's just, you know, it's very crowded and all. But the residency has been amazing. We always wanted to do it because we wanted to stay in one place. And we do a week, two weekends, and then Wednesday. Every single performer is the same, Friday, Saturday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday. So you have some days in between there, and it's really key to get out of the strip and go outside into nature and connect with nature. We've been to a couple of canyons. There's a little town called Blue Diamond with a lot of burros running around.
Sure.
And also there's a great gym and great restaurant. So, and we have friends. In fact, Amy and Elizabeth from Betty came to visit this last time, and we had a blast, and they gambled a little bit. I don't gamble at all, because I'm a loser baby. Even the slots.
But I was looking at the set list, and it's just, you were mentioning your set list for this show that you're doing at City Winery. But this is something for everyone. I cannot imagine you walking in as a B-52s fan and not just being 100% delighted by what you're performing.
The audience was amazing, and especially the last Saturday night, it was just, they were just roaring, and you could tell people were having a good time. And I'm fascinated looking at the audience, how they're dancing and singing along and just enjoying themselves. And that's really important right now, right? To have some fun. And
you talk about losing money. I lost $175 on you yesterday.
What did you bet?
I didn't bet anything. I went, when you arranged, you were coming in, and then I went online to start looking to see what was going on. And then there's a little squib in Rolling Stone about this new box set that's coming out on June 20th. And it's the B-52s, the Warner and Reprise years remastered.
Ah.
And there are 9 albums, and each album is a different color of the rainbow. And so you take the albums out of the out of the sleeves, and there they are. Comes out June 20th, pre-order, and they're only making 2,000 of them. Bam. Woo. Got one. And
I would not say that's a loss.
No, it is not a loss. That is that's absolutely correct. That is a very good point.
You get more than your money's worth.
But man, is that's a lot of great music in a box. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really fun. The other thing I wanted to mention is you were talking about college radio and how much that influenced you and the band and helped in its success. And it was the same for REM, right? I mean, that was it was another very similar path, although they took it a little bit later than you did.
Just barely, because I remember seeing one of their very first performances in Athens, and we rode our bicycles down to this place where they were playing, and just a small place. And I've followed them, I'm friends with them. They're amazing, amazing. But yeah, they followed in our path, because really, after that, there was Pylon and Love Tractor and all these other Athens bands that are just all different from each other, which is amazing. Nobody sounds like any other band from Athens.
No. I spent some time in Athens last year, and as you go around and you tour, the two points of reference are, well, this happened from REM and this happened with the B-52s, and that's the tourism of the place, which is really cool.
We were just there, actually. I forgot to mention that the hockey team, there's a new hockey stadium, and I think
that Civic Arena or whatever that is? Yeah.
And they had a contest, and they named the hockey team the Rock Lobsters. And we opened the stadium with a concert after the next day was the game. They gave us the shirts, and we got to go in the back room and meet the players, and it was just an amazing thing.
The next time you're at the sports book in Vegas, go bet on the Rock Lobsters.
Okay. I might try that. Maybe I'll be a winner this time.
Very, very cool. It's an amazing place because it's a college town. It's funky, and I'm saying this affectionately, but offbeat.
Yes, yeah. It's kind of like a Portland weird, but smaller, a lot smaller. It was really a farmer's town when I first moved there. When I moved there, I did a back to the land thing. I raised goats, had a huge garden and chickens, and there was a feed store, a farmer's hardware, and a feed and seed stores.
Yep.
And that was it. There was no club. There was one folk club. We eventually got to play there, the last resort, but we just had to play at parties. So that was our first party in 1977, Valentine's Day, at a friend's house. And the wall shook. The whole shack shimmied. And I really lived out in the country in this really, it was like the love shack. It was in the middle of a field, a funky old shack. And I had an outhouse. And it was $15 a month on Eloise Maxwell's farm.
Not bad.
Yeah, it was a great... It was a great house. I loved it.
Not bad at all. One of my favorite songs on Radios and Rainbows is a song about laundry. And you don't have enough laundromat songs canon, I don't think. And I would just like to play this for people. It's it's amazing, and it is called Always Till Now. And just you'll hear it. It's just a fun, fun song.
I met him at the laundromat. He flashed me a smile. We sorted out a dirty laundry and talked for a while. We put the money in and watched our clothing spin. Kissed him by the folding counter. Then we both agreed we would always be always, always till now. We got a little place by the Golden Gate, small but bright. He wrote his poems and I wrote my songs, but sometimes we'd fight. He was an order freak, I wasn't
I love that. Are you neat or not neat?
I'm neat.
Yes, yeah. So unlike the character in the song.
I switched the lyric, actually.
Switch the lyric.
It was about a previous relationship I had, and he wasn't very neat, but just...
It worked better.
A wonderful person, and it just didn't work. And I did... It's a real heartfelt song, because I did feel at that time it would be always, and then till it wasn't.
Yeah. But that is a great story song, right? I mean, that just tells a great story.
I love a story song, and I also love the song Evil Love, because I got to tell a story that really wasn't personal, a detective kind of or a revenge story.
Yeah,
and
sort
of
film
pose.
Noir
exactly.
kind of thing.
Exactly, and there's a really great video for that. But Always Till Now is really a true story for the most part.
When we go out, we're going to play Evil Love so people get a chance to hear that song, which is really terrific, an amazing song on the new album, Radios and Rainbows. And Kate Pearson will be performing from the new album and all kinds of great stuff at City Winery in the Hudson Valley in Montgomery, New York, on Friday, May 2nd at 7:30. You have your website, katepearson.com.
Correct.
You can also find out information at citywinery.com. And there's also b52s.com.
Facebook, The Kate Pearson, Instagram, and I'm on TikTok, too. I'm trying to get tickety-tock on there.
Do you like that? I mean, you've seen every iteration of how to produce and put out music that this medium has had for a really long time. I mean, that's very cool.
I spoke to this friend who's a record executive, and he said they don't even sign a band now unless they have some presence on TikTok or mostly TikTok, you know, and have followers for their music. It's just amazing. And I do enjoy TikTok. Luckily, I do enjoy posting stuff. And I'm working with John Stapleton, who has been doing videos for me, and also our publicist, and just trying to pump that social media because that's really important. But I find it fun to do the pictures and to record stuff and do some silly stuff on TikTok.
I hope you know how cool and how amazing it has been to have you in the studio. I absolutely adore you. I adore your music, and it's just been the great thrill to have you here.
Well, I'm saying that you guys are rock stars to me. I have a degree in journalism, actually, and when I see great news reporting and I listen to the radio, you guys are just icons to me, and I'm thrilled to be here with you, and I hear your voice every morning, I said, so it's great to see you in person.
Well, thank you very much. Maybe we can get you to do the panel sometime. You come on and get some...
I'd love to do that, I've got some opinions.
I bet you do. Kate Pearson's new album, Radios and Rainbows, she'll be at City Winery, Hudson Valley, in Montgomery, New York, Friday, May 2nd at 7:30, katepearson.com, citywinery.com.
And with Kate, Betty.
With Betty. Kate, much love. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. It's been so much fun.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.